Hello, and welcome to another episode of Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I am your science officer for this episode, Maddie Lubchansky.
And I am, I guess I'm Captain Clayton Ashley. Yeah,
that's correct. This week we are also joined by special guest, our second ever special guest, entertainment journalist and critic, Joshua Rivera. Welcome, Josh.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
We have a guest, and that's why I actually suddenly was like a little embarrassing to say I'm the captain.
You're the case. You know what? It's like we have company over, Clayton, and you're not even wearing your formal captain's uniform. Yeah, this week it is episode one of season two, Shockwave Part Two, and the weeks of May 29th, 2002 through the 18th of September of the same year, because that's right, folks. It is the start of the second season of the show Enterprise, so there's a bunch of stuff to cover. I think we should probably get into it.
Yeah, and also that who better to have than a culture entertainment journalist like Joshua? How much do you remember the summer of 2002?
Let me think. It was probably like the summer I started reading the Orlando Sentinel, like religiously, freaking dork. I was like a little preteen and I wasn't allowed to watch TV or movies, but I read about them all in the paper. So I loved to pretend I knew what I was talking about.
I was about to say that like this for some reason brought me back a little bit this era to gaming magazines and how much reading stuff back then allowed you to imagine the game. Because there was there's no video, there's no moving film. There's just a couple images, and then you fill it in from the description. And I realize it's kind of fun to do that.
I'm just thinking about my friend Banjo and what his friend Kazooie are up to in the theater of the mind. Mm-hmm. Those guys are just running around. They're fighting a voodoo skull. If memory serves.
That sounds right. Yeah, there's like a witch too. Right,
my wife is super into that game, and recently
I loved that game.
Like, was showing me it, and it's just so bizarre to me. But
I
get the puzzle piece, and then I can defeat the witch who lives in this giant house. But not before he like dive underneath a giant fish.
Okay, motherfucker, you want to describe any platformer? Let me get this straight. I'm a plumber, but I'm fighting a big monkey. So I just want you to hear yourself for a second. There,
wow.
Clayton. Yeah, I agree.
Egg on my face.
Egg on your face. Let's get into it. I want to do the news first because there's a shit ton of crap to get through here. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of run through May, June, and July and August before we get to September. Okay. So things that we did not cover in May. In late May, the Odyssey Mars rover found ice on Mars.
Oh, sick.
Oh,
pretty
wow,
cool.
Yeah.
And that's why we all live there to this day. The U.S. Department of State, things got really this summer. I recall this. Things got really hot in India and Pakistan, and the U.S. Withdrew all of our personnel from India because of the rising tensions over Kashmir and Jammu. That's May, because we cover most of May. So June. Let's talk about June. That is when R. Kelly is arrested and charged.
Wow. Okay. Have we spoken about R. Kelly yet on the show?
We've not spoken about R. Kelly. I don't even know if
it's possible
we've talked about
a song or something.
We talked about Aaliyah because right around now her posthumous album has come out.
Yes.
So there's like some R. Kelly to that. Mm-hmm. The R. Kelly of it all there as he was, dating her when she was very young and he was not so much. Mm-hmm. But this is when he is arrested and charged with the sexual assault and the... minors. It's like a kind of a bummer and not fun to talk about on my fun podcast.
Right. I mean, it's a good thing he didn't have a career after that and no one, celebrated him for many years after,
Last That's we right. heard of old it's, Kelly. Yeah.
Thank you, cancel culture, for being real. So we talked last week on the show about the obsession with and threat of, and play like the Castle Thunder music over this one, the Dirty Bomb. The Dirty Bomb, because we had the Sum of All Fears came out right at the end of the first season of Enterprise. In June 2002, John Ashcroft claimed that the U.S. government uncovered and stopped an Al-Qaeda plot to detonate a dirty bomb in the U.S. And we never got any more details about it.
But they totally did it.
But they were like, we stopped one. Don't you worry, folks. We're all over it. This is not like 9/11 at all.
It was probably very Jack Bauer-esque. Just imagine what happened, but no details.
It was really cool. John Ashcroft was shirtless and running around stopping a dirty bomb. And he was so fucking sexy the whole time. What else happened in June? John Gotti died? Dies?
That was, died? That dies. Was a deal. Yeah, that was a big deal.
The Teflon Don himself. I know so much about John Gotti because I've watched the film Gotti like 7 times. You guys ever watch that movie?
No.
I don't think I have.
It's the John Gotti approved. John Gotti biopic. Well, it's approved by his son.
Okay.
And it's just kind of like, it's so laudatory of John Gotti. It's so funny. And it's just like, well, he was just the guy from the neighborhood protecting everybody. And it's like, and what else did he do?
Oh, it's 2018 though. It's a new.
It's
20. One.
It's a John Travolta.
It might have been. Gandhi. So I feel like, if I recall correctly, it was made in 2018, but no one saw it for like a full year because the studio didn't want people to know about it.
Yeah. So there's a bit in the beginning of the film where you're looking at the New York City skyline. I think from like the park near Queensbridge, and you see. John Travolta as John Gotti walk out, and he looks right down the barrel of the camera, and he goes, "There's only two ways out of this life, dead or in jail. Me, I got both."
Wait a minute. A
crazy way to say you died in jail, John. Yeah.
I'm going to say that about this podcast. It's only two ways out of here.
Welcome to another episode of Temporal Culture War, where there are only two ways out, dead or arrested, which you'll find out at the end when you get the home version of the podcast on your way out. So also in June of 2002, the U.S. consulate in Karachi is attacked. So all the U.S. personnel also leave Pakistan. Things are getting hot and scary. A federal court in San Francisco declared that the Pledge of Allegiance was unconstitutional. Do we all remember this? Frou-frou-ah?
Oh man. So like this this was like a part of like the steady march to like freedom fries, right? Like
But this was like this got all the conservatives really mad because it was like the under God shit was ruled unconstitutional, which it is.
I'm curious if you have the detail there, if it was that you cannot say the pledge with that line in it, or you just cannot say the pledge.
So they banned the Pledge of Allegiance from school in 2002, a judge did. I don't know if it's stuck. I haven't been to school since 2002. But it was, I'm on the Wikipedia page for the criticism of the Pledge of Allegiance. That's a cool Wikipedia article to be on.
Hell yeah.
I mean, the like boogeyman of San Francisco had to have been a thing by this point. But I mean, if it wasn't already, this is like perfect, perfect for that era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Supreme Court apparently took the explicit stance that the phrase under God is merely a ceremonial reference to history and not an affirmation of religious faith.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That started in like 1950, right?
Is like, you know, the plaintiff in this case was an atheist, like a 2002 atheist, which turns out they were right about a lot of stuff. And yeah, so I think it is technically, I think you can't like enforce it if you don't like want to do it. Cool. Well, that's that. In July, do we all remember John Walker Lind, the American Taliban?
No.
I was wondering when this was going to come up.
So we actually missed it, Clayton. In November, it was in November of 2001 is when he was captured. So we actually missed it. He was captured right at the beginning of the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001. But in July of 2002, he pled guilty to, I guess, being in the Taliban.
And he joined after, right? Or was it...
He converted to... He was just there already in like 2000.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Because I thought that would I thought that happened, that there was a couple people who joined after the fact and it was a whole ordeal. But this guy was in ahead of the curve.
Yeah, he was on the ground floor.
He was already there.
Seed funding, you know?
Pre-September 11th. Which is cool. He is a free man, by the way, currently.
Wow.
I mean, all they did was charge him with being in the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
This is also, if we want to talk about, this July is a really heavy month on military interventions. 2001 is also when stuff started getting sort of very unpleasant again in the Gaza Strip. Mm-hmm. This was like, so this was when the leader of Hamas at the time, a guy named Ahmad Yassin, he offered the Israeli government, he said, "I will stop all suicide attacks during the Second Intifada." He said, "I want a full Israeli withdrawal from the West Bank and Gaza Strip." And right after that offer, of course, the Israelis dropped a bomb into a residential area of Gaza City, killing a bunch of people and a lot of children. And then this is around this time is when, you know, Israel fully begins the occupation that goes on now. Just little echoes of history here in terms of like we are living in the long 2001, 2002. Oh, at the time, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon said it is well known that he regrets the killing of civilians. So that's great and very comforting to me personally. A very funny, stupid thing happened here. Do we remember the Millennium Challenge 2002, the U.S. Army exercise?
No.
So this was it was a war game and it was very famous. It was mandated by Congress in 2000 to like explore like what the future of warfare was going to be like. And they split the military, everyone participating in the war game and all the generals into two sides, red and blue. And United States was blue. And the there was like a fictitious Persian Gulf state called Red. And
didn't we like lose badly?
Yeah, so the red team had like less resources to work with and basically did asymmetrical warfare and demolished the U.S. Like,
yeah,
both were the U.S. obviously, but like the red team was simulating just like being like no, but nothing to lose, like asymmetrical tactics, like guerrilla warfare shit, and was absolutely demolishing the U.S. until they paused the game and put a bunch of major constraints on the red team, and then the blue team won.
Wow, refs. So this reminded me, I think there is something extremely similar to this a little more recently, where they were testing the Navy against different kinds of submarines, because I think your entire submarine fleet is nuclear, and one of the Norwegian countries has these like diesel technology, but they're extremely quiet. So they offer different tactics, and they had a war game where like one of those destroyed like an entire U.S. naval fleet just because they were completely unprepared for it. So yeah, they have a history of doing this sort of thing.
Yeah, just we cannot lose. It's great. So in August, Israel invades Gaza. Let's move along to September, where Hamid Karzai, the new Prime Minister of Afghanistan, survives an assassination attempt. So things are going well.
Was he put in by the U.S. at this point?
Yeah, this is like the Afghan government that's like, this is the real Afghan government. Wink. Also that month, I'll get to the big thing in a second, but the other, I mean, not insignificant thing, but the Sri Lankan Civil War had been raging for like 20 years at this point. And September 18th, 2002, the day this episode airs, so, you know, maybe they wanted to get home to watch it, the Tamil Tigers dropped the bid for independence and just decided to become an autonomous zone in the north and northwest of Sri Lanka, which is like one of the worst and most protracted civil wars in like the history of the world, where almost every single enemy combatant was wiped out on the side of the Tamil Tigers, like very, like absolute dismantled, like really gnarly, really horrible civil war there. Anyways, September of 2002, as we all know, is the 1 year anniversary of September 11th, 2001 occurs.
Of course.
Where there is like all sorts of pomp and circumstance, all sorts of remembrances and whatever. Now, a shocking thing happens the next day. On September 12th, 2002 is when George W. Bush goes to the UN General Assembly and he asserts that Iraq has defied various UN resolutions and is, quote, a threat to the authority of the United Nations and a threat to peace. And he says the U.S. will work with the Security Council to draft the necessary resolutions for a military action. What woe is what my notes say.
What? No, wait. We talked about the dirty bomb in Al-Qaeda. We talked about this stuff. Mm-hmm. There's been obviously the Afghanistan occupation, mm-hmm. anti-counter-terrorist action. But we haven't really talked much about Iraq specifically coming up yet. Like, was
well,
it this
because
summer?
This is when it starts.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, damn. Like, you know, So, I mean, like, go listen to mm-hmm. season one of Blowback if you really want to, like, get into the weeds here. But this is when it really, this is when it all starts. This is when the 2000s really begin. is September of 2002 is when they really start. I mean, they clearly had drawn up the plans for this a year previous, but they had to first go actually do the Al-Qaeda stuff that they'd promised to do. Mm-hmm. So that's the 12th. The 16th is when Iran said they were going to allow the UN inspectors. I think for the next several months of episodes, we're going to be getting a lot of Iraq war update. And that's going to be most of the history stuff. By the 19th of September, the Bush administration, the U.S. Congress, rather, they passed a resolution giving Bush authority to use all the means he determines to be appropriate, including force, to oust Saddam Hussein and disarm the nation of Iraq. So just play the most ominous music possible for that one, if you have it. So yeah, it's the bad times are beginning. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
But the good news is this summer had some bops. So I'm just going to run down some music hits from the summer because, you know, it's like Billboard. I was reading every week of the Billboard, just trying to like note down stuff that's like memorable. And then we'll get to the week of this episode. Mm-hmm. So some memorable hits from the summer. Nelly's Hot in Here. Mm. And also Nelly featuring Kelly Rowland's Dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great tunes. Avril Lavigne is here with Complicated and Skater Boy over the summer.
Right. Damn.
Huge summer for Avril Lavigne. Eminem's Cleaning Out My Closet is this summer.
His like least boppy hit. Maybe.
Not a bop. A really depressing song. Yeah. Yeah. I think Stan has already come out at this point, but mm-hmm. A song with the longest tail of any song in human history, mm-hmm. culture-wise. It's crazy to consider when that song came out that we'd be talking about Stan's 20.
He's got a documentary out, I think, this month called Stan.
Oh, yeah?
God. Yeah, cool. that is about fandom, and I'm pretty sure he produced it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, I hope Dido is narrating. The song Just a Friend 2002 by Mario. It's a great tune. System of a Down came out this summer with Aerials, which was like their follow-up to Chop Suey, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's a really important song came out in 2002 in the summer. Ludacris featuring Mystical and Infamous 2.0. And that's right. I'm talking about Move Bitch. Which swept the nation. I will also say, Hot in Here was at number one like the entire summer. Like,
of course.
Could not be moved.
Mm-hmm.
Unbudgeable. The second September hits, it dropped. People are like, I'm no longer physically hot.
Yeah. Well, it was physically hot, actually. This is a notable thing. This was a heat wave. Mm. 2002. Summer 2002 was a heat wave, especially in New York City.
So they were like, don't remind me.
No, thank you. There's also a lot of extreme weather. There were a lot of floods in Europe this summer. I didn't want to get too into that because it's not that historically important, but there were like huge floods all over. I think there was a big one in Glasgow. There was some more flooding in continental Europe. This week, though, the week of the episode, our normal purview and how these episodes function is new this week. Kelly Clarkson's A Moment Like This.
Mm.
The Dixie Chicks cover of Landslide.
Oh, they haven't been canceled yet.
They have not
been canceled. This is pre the Chicks. Yeah.
The cancellation is 2003. Mm-hmm. We have a whole season of Enterprise before the Chicks cancellation. And of course, Christina Aguilera featuring Redman. With Dirty.
Hell yeah.
Do you remember the song Dirty, everybody?
I sure do.
Clayton, you're making a face.
I don't
not like the song Dirty?
I don't.
You don't know either. You don't know the song?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay. I'm just gonna real quick read the lyrics. I just wanna read the lyrics of the chorus is okay, just cool. Gonna get rowdy. gonna get a little unruly. Get it fired up in a hurry. Want to get dirty? It's just sweat dripping all over my body. Dancing, getting just a little naughty. Want to get dirty? It's a real, it's Christina Aguilera being like, not only am I like a hot, I am like sexy and I'm going to have sex with you. I'm going to have sex with you right now.
Damn.
And you're going, and you're going to accept that.
And she's belting like every line.
She's going, she's going crazy in this song. I can't believe you don't remember the song Dirty.
I probably would remember it, but like,
it's the only one where she says over and over, want to get dirty.
Yeah, when it's just a lot of this, like I Skater Boy was on the radio and my mom and sister, like they had control over it. I didn't really care as much, but I got a lot of that. Dixie Chicks, definitely.
Sure.
I probably did hear this. Probably know what it is, just not by name.
You were listening to Hot in Here Only.
Hot in Here Only. Now, I was curious if you were going to put this in the music section or not, but this summer was also pretty big for a certain television event. Phenomenon, maybe.
Oh, I don't think... Oh, was this... You tell me.
So I was searching. I was just curious. Yeah. I searched summer 2002, and I got some great posts on Reddit of people talking about American the vibes. Idol. It's American Idol summer. It came up a lot. The heat wave came up a lot. Some of these songs you mentioned came up. But American Idol came up a ton because this was the first summer, and it ended right in September before Enterprise started up again.
Interesting.
And that was... Who was the first winner?
Kelly Clarkson and Justin Guarini was the second, was the runner-up, and they were in the movie From Justin to Kelly.
From Justin to Kelly.
Yeah.
Which they, I think they spent upwards of 12 or 13 minutes writing that movie.
Oh, yeah. And just rushed them in front of the set.
I think maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours filming it, and they just really... like, they're filming it while running the film to the movie theaters. Like, they filmed it in the back of a truck driving to... The distributor,
and,
I think.
And like, even with that, it's really funny, like how apparent, like Kelly Clarkson is just a star, right? She's got like natural charisma and she can do it. She can't necessarily act per se, but like, in comparison, Justin Guarini is just sort of like a plastic smile with like a mystifying voice like, behind it. Cause like the dude could sing, but like, it was it's wild that they've not produced like a winner as massive since, you know?
Didn't they? Isn't what's her name? Isn't Carrie Underwood an American Idol?
Carrie Underwood might be. Is she? I can't remember.
I'm almost like, positive. I feel like there's a country girly.
Yeah, there's
and
a
I feel
country
like
girly.
It was Clay Aiken was the other one. I feel like I remember
Clay Aiken. Yeah. Former
it's probably
congressional
the name
candidate.
It was Carrie Underwood. I was like, well, Carrie Underwood was way later. She was season four.
Yeah, it was like the first four seasons were the only ones, right? That produced stars.
I remember. Ruben Studdard.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for
2004. Yeah. He apologized for all the wrong shit though.
Whoops. Well, so that's...
I remember watching that first season mainly because of the... And I feel bad in retrospect because I don't like this aspect of it, but mainly because of the bad singers in the first episode.
Oh,
like,
that was the only reason to watch for
me. And now I don't like it. I don't like that. It's not fair.
No, I don't like I don't like to feel bad.
Yeah.
I love to feel good. So, talking TV. You know, we tend to stick to like what's airing the night of Trek, but I also saw... Right, the week of this episode of Star Trek, the show Firefly has debuted.
Oh, hell yeah.
Which asks the brave question, what if Star Trek was Star Wars? Or vice versa.
And about, like, Confederates who lost.
I was going to say, kind of about the Star Confederates.
What if it was all that, but about lost causers?
Yeah.
But they sometimes speak Mandarin, so...
They sometimes speak Mandarin.
It's not
Mandarin.
The same.
They proudly they say to you, the viewer, you cannot take the sky from me. That show is probably bad, right? I feel like I loved it in college when I was a dumb child in like 2003 to 2007.
Right.
But I bet it's bad.
I think there's a lot of good actors. And I remember, and it's, I think still, if anything's good, it's the movie. Probably just because of Chiwetel Ejiofor is a really good villain in it. But
he's great.
Yeah, can't speak to the show anymore because it's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a show like I think everybody roughly our age enjoyed in college and hasn't really thought of since, unless they're like still devoted to posting about it on Tumblr, which some people are.
Yeah. Well, for the glory of Joss Whedon, of course, yeah. and all of his good works.
Kind of a little, I guess he because of what happened to him is why, but a little surprising that didn't get picked up on one of these streaming services. It feels like that was a property with a fan base. But
I can't believe they haven't tried to reboot that turd.
Yeah. Well,
but so in the meantime, Enterprise has moved to Wednesday nights, where it is no longer up against the vile and hated Dawson of Dawson's Creek after suffering a defeat at our hands of Enterprise. We are, however, getting our asses smashed in by my wife and kids. All repeats, by the way.
Yep.
Getting killed by my wife and kids reruns. Big Brother, sure. Mm. An hour block on Fox. That is the Bernie Mac Show and Cedric the Entertainer Presents.
That's right.
Which I don't have any recollection of watching Cedric the Entertainer Presents.
Yeah, I don't remember that half. I remember the Bernie Mac half.
I remember the Bernie Mac half, but like Cedric the Entertainer Presents was like a sketch show.
Oh, fun.
Starring Cedric the Entertainer. Yeah. And J.B. Smoove was on there.
Hell yeah.
That's good. maybe that's... I mean, maybe it's
it deserved
good.
To beat Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm reading about the recurring sketches on Cedric the Entertainer Presents, which, by the way, bad name for a sketch show. Mm-hmm. It should be called the Cedric the Entertainer Show or Cedric Entertains You or something. But I'm looking at the recurring sketches and I'm seeing stuff like a recurring sketch called Player Babies. Think about it.
Think about it.
Think about Player Babies. There's a recurring sketch called Que Hora Es, which is the Mexican soap opera for people who have only had 3 weeks of Spanish in the fourth grade.
All right.
Which is potentially a very funny concept.
Yeah.
If you're trying to construct an entire soap opera out of Donde Está la Biblioteca. Yeah. Right? And then, of course, something called Schleppy and Fry Pan. So.
Well, I can't tell from that one. The other two sounds like there's a chance.
I feel like it would be out of my depth trying to figure out, work backwards from that title.
Yeah. Also, of course, The Horny Bears and Thug Pranks.
Oh, that sounds great. That's basically, basically World Star before.
Yeah. That's
really bad. I will say this show was nominated for a Teen Choice Award for Cedric the Entertainer. So, and they just don't give those to anybody, those nominations. So
the teens know. The teens know.
No, but, I mean, the teens love to laugh, you know.
They love to be entertained.
They love to be entertained.
Yeah. So we're losing to Cedric the Entertainer Presents and in the back half of the hour because people are watching Que Hora Es. And then
I also know what ratings, because just as I looked into the episode stats, this part two didn't even do as good as part one.
Yeah, it's really quite bad.
Yeah.
It's doing a 3.2, which is like not great. Like it's beating Candid Camera on PAX, and that's about it. It is losing, of course, also to Ed, a repeat of Ed.
Oh my God. And PAX is also new, all right? PAX like just was PAX formed a year before or something like that.
I think so, yeah. We are losing to also the WB Wednesday movie. I'm sorry. You know what? We are beating a showing of Blue Streak.
Hell yeah.
1999's Blue Streak.
We're on the board.
So like the thing we hate now is going to be the Wednesday movie, which I think is going to be really fun.
Which we hopefully beat every time.
Which I hope. I'm not going to say it. No spoilers. Yeah, I think we do pretty good against the Wednesday movie on WB. But that'll be good to talk about movies from 1998 to 1999, yeah. which we'll be airing there. So that's Televisión. And I want to talk about, of course, the movies. The movies. Very important. So it's a big, not much new this week. So I'm going to spend some time with everybody. We're going to go through the summer movies that seemed basically everything that was new. And I'll pull out a couple that seem kind of maybe important. Well, of course, we've got The Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm. There was a really bad Letterman sketch, I think, about this.
What was the Letterman sketch?
I'm not sure if it was Letterman. It was like a late night flavor, but it was just like a bunch of like, yeah, you know, just like women who just said yeah. And that was really basically it.
I thought it was... top 10 things you wouldn't do in the Yaya Sisterhood.
That was probably part of it too. Yeah, Letterman probably did that. Somebody worse probably did the Yaya thing. I can't remember.
I feel like having to write comedy sketches in one day is probably not good for your comedy.
Yeah.
Also this summer, the 2002 Scooby-Doo live action.
Wow.
With nice.
Linda Cardellini as Velma, and she's so hot in it. It's crazy.
Yeah, they basically make the movie about that.
Velma's
this and our is beloved, Shaggy.
Yeah, it's
Matthew Lillard.
Name is Matthew Lillard, who by the way still does Shaggy like in the cartoons to this day.
His
Shaggy was so good. They're like, you're actually Shaggy.
You are Shaggy. I thought there was something about like he hurt his voice doing this movie.
It's possible,
but he didn't care because he wanted to be Shaggy so bad.
Are you sure he didn't hurt his voice doing Without a Paddle?
Also this summer, 9/11 milieu alert, The Bourne Identity. Feels very of the time. Paul Greengrass's really good movie, I think.
The Bourne Identity.
It did, however, ruin movies for 20 years, camera wise. The shaky cam killed me forever.
Yes.
The only movie that does it well.
The thing, if you go back and watch it, the thing there is that like it's not doing it to hide the fact they don't have a budget for good fight scenes. It's doing incredible stunts, and it's frenetic. And if you do that together, it's a good combination. But most people don't.
Right. Yeah. This summer, of course, Lilo and Stitch comes out. The movie that the last maybe decent hand drawn animated movie that Disney ever did.
Hmm?
I guess Princess and the Frog is later. But this one, they were working on it in like the other Disney animation studio. The one's not in California. It was like in Florida and in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And famously, the Disney Corporation kept forgetting to check in on them, and they were kind of allowed to do whatever they want. So the movie's weird. It's cool.
Wasn't there like controversy about like Lilo like hiding in a dryer or something like that? This sounds like a.
I don't remember. Like, there's a controversy, not a controversy, but the thing I was going to say is directly 9/11 related, is that there was the ending where there's basically a giant spaceship the size of a jumbo jet.
Oh, yeah.
Is flying through Honolulu, flying between
That's
buildings.
Right.
That got, and it was pretty well like animated, and then had to completely toss that and change the ending. So the ending's a bit more low budget in terms of like they're just kind of in the clouds, they're just not flying against any background. And I remember that and being like, that's a deleted scene. But I think there's a funnier deleted scene where Lilo is making way more fun of the white tourists in Honolulu. Get that too.
I want to see that. Minority Report comes out this summer. Great movie that's all about like that, you know, adaptation of old story, but it feels very like 9/11 paranoia. Like this feels like the closest we get to like a decent paranoia trilogy style movie about like the surveillance, the rise of the surveillance state. Of course, probably
it's based on a book, right?
Yeah, it's based on it's Philip K. Dick.
It's a Philip K. Dick. I didn't want to say.
Story, I want to say. If it's not Philip K. Dick, it's someone trying to do Philip K. Dick.
But it's, I think that was a cool thing just for one part of it, which is that the psychic readings had to be like carved into a ball.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about how it'll just do that little like mechanical bit to a movie. There's not like a real good reason for it other than
it
just makes something more tangible about it. And I like that. I think a lot of people remember the like hand wavy
the gestural shit. Yeah,
there was so much press at the time that was like, we talked to futurologists and futuronomists both about what the future will be like, and they're like, oh yeah, the cops have batons that make you vomit and they got jetpacks. And Tom Cruise worked out a whole visual language with his hands to like tracks. And it's like, okay, that's fine. You could have sold me on the film by telling me Tim Blake Nelson plays an organ. And then I would have been, my butt would have been in the seat no matter what. I think a movie that is probably as good as Minority Report that came out this summer is Juana Man.
Oh, yeah.
The film Juana Man.
They talked to a futurologist for that one, too.
That's right. Yeah, about how I'm going to pretend to be a woman to be better at sports. Mr. Deeds, this film, came out. Also, Men in Black 2, the kind of bad follow-up to the great film Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
Though it's very funny because there was this one week, Men in Black 2, Like Mike and Hey Arnold, the movie are the new movies that week. And the next week, July 5th, nothing new comes out. There's no new movies. And I was like, was everyone that afraid of Men in Black 2?
Wow.
That's like the only explanation I could possibly imagine.
Yeah. I mean, that's got pedigree and star power, so I can kind of understand it. But did it actually turn out to be that big?
No, it was not. Road to Perdition comes out this summer. A movie only I remember called Reign of Fire.
Oh, that's the Christian Bale one, right?
Where it's the Christian Bale dragon movie.
Yeah, post-apocalyptic dragons.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I've been meaning to catch up on that one.
It's pretty... Maybe that's a candidate, Clayton.
That could be a candidate
for a Patreon episode, because that movie is so stupid.
I can't imagine it being anything else.
Stuart Little 2, Austin Powers and Goldmember.
That also came up weirdly in like three different Reddit posts about why the summer of 2002 was so cool.
There's a lot of like
what Goldmember
came out.
A lot of movies I remember coming out this summer. Signs comes out this summer. Spy Kids 2, notable for 9/11 reasons, of course, the film Master of Disguise.
Yes.
Dana Carvey's masterpiece, where he plays the spy, Pistachio Disguisey, which, you know, this movie is famous if you've not seen it. The IMDb trivia lists that they were filming the sequence where he is at the Turtle Club on 9/11, and they stopped filming for a moment of silence.
I want to look up the oral history of
the Master of Disguise of the Turtle Club.
Someone wrote this and it was really good.
There was also a defector piece called like At the Turtle Club in the Shadow of 9/11 or something like that.
That God, I can't think of which one I'm thinking about. That could be the one.
I can't believe. So I have.
There might be two incredible articles out there about this. Mm-hmm.
I draw a couple illustrations a month for Defector, for my pals at Defector. And I'm so mad they did not assign me at the Turtle Club. And I'm gonna have a little talk with my editors, Tom and Barry, about this. We're gonna have a chat about why I was not assigned that. Also, in terms of shit that totally is like 2002 and rocks ass in a 2002 way and is maybe a little fascist, the film Triple X.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because I talked about this recently, or I looked in this film recently when I was doing a documentary about Spycraft. And this is one of those, like, renegade Russian movies. This is in that oeuvre. It's not, like, terrorists that we're now facing. So there's kind of this weird distance where these movies would keep doing this. Like, we're still kind of almost doing the hangover 90s villains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it doesn't even matter. It's just like, whatever. They're terrorists. They're trying to get nukes.
Yeah. This summer, also, we've got The Adventures of Pluto Nash, Swim Fan, Fear.com, one word.
Yes, Fear.com, a movie with like an amazingly hideous poster.
I mean, I was on my computer going to Fear.com.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't we all? There was a crazy thing here is that Sony Pictures released a double feature of Men in Black 2 and Spider-Man. I was like, when was the last time they tried to do that?
That's interesting. If Man in Black 2 was not doing good and Spider-Man did incredible and probably
Spider-Man
still
did amazing.
Was,
yeah.
They were probably trying to buoy the numbers there.
And notable for this summer that we've not talked about yet because it's already been out. We already talked about it already on the show. But in its 19th week at the box office, My Big Fat Greek Wedding hits number one.
That's right.
Interesting.
There were all sorts of stories about this like sleeper hit, right? Like,
yeah,
it's how a lot of people learned what a sleeper hit was.
Yeah,
it was like the big deal that summer was this like crazy word of mouth like runaway train thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is wild.
Yeah,
I only caught up in that recently.
Yeah, fun. And of course this week new, we've got Barbershop.
Mm.
Nice.
Which I've actually never seen. And a slapstick action comedy starring Tom Green and Jason Lee called Stealing Harvard.
Okay.
Where they are like trying to like rob a bank so someone can like go to Harvard, I think. Or they're trying to.
What a washed way to like spend a fucking haul.
Yeah. Well, it's like a family member. They were like, it was like running some scam. It's like one of those early 2000s movies where it's like about idiot criminals, but it's not good.
Yeah.
But the cast is crazy. It's, well, I mean, well, there's Tom Green, which I think we've talked about the Tom Green phenomenon on this show before, but we're like deep in the Tom Green era. But it's Tom Green, Jason Lee, Leslie Mann, Megan Mullally, Dennis Farina, and Chris Penn in this film. I'm like, wait, Dennis Farina?
Yeah.
Maybe I got to watch this.
I kind of didn't expect us this deep into this to be discovering movies like this that have just been completely sort of like taken taken from our history.
Yeah, this this movie, of course, is 85 minutes long, so I bet it's great.
Yeah.
One of those movies that's just like, we are out of ideas, credits.
Yeah. Oh my, it's got Martin Starr and Nick Offerman also.
It'd be really funny if this is the start of the Megan Mullally Nick Offerman relationship.
I was like, is this where they met?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Where did they meet? No, they met in the year 2000.
Did they meet on Mr. Show?
This is reunion.
In a play together.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. That's cute.
Yeah. Well, anyways. And that is, we're deep into the show. We should keep it moving.
We should get, I'll take the captain's seat and take us to part two of Shockwave.
I mean, there's not too much to talk about this episode because nothing happens in a
preview. Back to this episode, part two. It's a season opener. This is, you know, for everyone who wasn't sure about season one, get ready for a rip-roaring adventure.
What's so funny is I was actually looking at like the upcoming episodes and I was like, there's some good ones.
I was thinking
up.
The
like,
same
the
thing.
Show gets so much better the show gets so much better so much faster than in the first season, but there's still like, oh, right, we got to close the loop on this piece of shit part one we wrote.
It's so incredible, like, how much it doesn't give a shit about the story it's set up.
Well, it's like, I don't know, like, so, Joshua, what is, you're familiar with Enterprise going into this?
Okay, so I was familiar, like, I mentioned I didn't, like, wasn't allowed to watch much TV. My folks were like super religious, but like my family would make like a couple exceptions. My dad would pull like a TV out of the closet to like watch Star Trek, you know? So I'm familiar with like Enterprise's premiering. I remember thinking even, you know, as a preteen who didn't know shit, that it seemed quite bad.
And how wrong you were.
And again, I also, like I said earlier, this is like when I started reading the entertainment section of the newspaper. So I remember like a lot of the talking points that they talked about, you know, like how it was like early on and how they wanted it to feel like a submarine. And like all of the stuff that they, you know, they were really into like the tactility of the set. And just sort of like how there isn't a Federation yet and all this other stuff. You retain a lot if you read it at the right age, which is like 12 years old. I also just thought it was weird because I had watched other Star Trek shows and like immediately everyone just seemed like anti-likable, you know, like rewatching this. I was like, man, Scott Beck, this is another reason why my dad wanted to watch it. My dad was a huge Quantum Leap guy.
Of course.
So like Scott Bakula as a captain, he was sad, man. And then I watching the show, I was like, why did anybody, I don't even know what he's doing. You know, like I have no,
when you say anti-likable, would you say unlikable?
Yeah. No, because here's the thing. I am resisting liking them. It's not that they're being terrible people.
Sorry, you're right. This is way more succinct.
This is how they power the engines, you see. And
people with the anti-likability.
An anti-liking field is generated.
But yeah, I remember just going back to this. I sort of get a little bit more now, right? Jonathan Archer is definitely like, they're more sailors than Starfleet people. So there's like a more pronounced rigidity to everyone's interactions, right? That makes sense. That doesn't mean I like Trip anymore or less, you know, like Trip sucks. What do you call it? They seem to have gotten worse at writing Vulcans.
Well, the Vulcans are I think this is like only something that becomes apparent to you mm-hmm. as you watch the show Enterprise, which of course everybody on Earth mm-hmm. does and has all the time, is that it is a different, the Vulcans are different. Mm-hmm. Like the Vulcans have not, like they are, they're all atheists, and it's like that religiousness mm-hmm. of Vulcans have not re-entered them.
Yeah.
So they are so much more boring to listen to because they're like, what if we took the Vulcans, right? From like Star Trek, you know, mm-hmm. you like Spock. What if he didn't know what a mind meld was? What if he didn't have any of the shit about him that's interesting?
And what if they're just kind of a bit more pissy about everything?
Yeah, what if he was just mad all the time and like that? Like there's an episode that we've not gotten to yet, I don't think, where they like encounter some like religious Vulcans.
And I know at this point I've only listened to like the first like several episodes. But like right from the start, you talk about how little respect Hoshi Sato gets.
Mm.
And it reaches like a fucking nadir in this one, man. Like they do a straight up porno gimmick here, and it is embarrassing.
Yeah. It's not good.
I don't know. And it's like Phlox is barely in this shit, and Phlox is great.
It's so annoying.
That's Phlox is so cool. I love, you see like the top of Phlox's head for four seconds.
Yeah.
That's all the Phlox. It's like you got him down to the studio and put him in all the fucking makeup for that.
Like I'm weirdly feeling defensive that there's times I like Trip. There's times I think Hoshi's gotten a fair deal. Not here, though. You're completely right that this episode and like just watch a couple, you would not think that these were ever likable people.
Yeah. And it's like, again, I think this, first of all, second half and season opener, doubleheader, like suffers from a bunch of like problems that are kind of like inherent to the show, like being a prequel, right? You were just talking about how the Vulcans have to be less interesting than the Vulcans that we know. But I think the same is true of just the conceit, the time travel thing, right? Where it just sort of like, every Star Trek has like several time travel episodes, right?
Yeah.
And usually there's a point where someone looks around and is like, oh, this is what's happening, you know? and here everyone just sort of has to like stumble through something that the viewer understood in part one, right? And that they were holding on for like 6 months almost. And then it's just like also compounded by like some very strange like acting choices, right? Like T'Pol is tortured, it seems, and like she chooses to portray her fatigue in the most buck wild way I've ever seen.
Yeah, okay, I'm gonna start. I'm gonna get to that because some of these scenes, and this will go quick because actually not a lot happens. So it picks up right after we left off. Sulaban and Enterprise, they're like, "What happened to Archer?" Both of them don't know. Back in the future, we get Daniels once again doing something we like, which is referencing something from culture like pre-1990.
Yes.
Yeah, be like, this is an H.G. Wells. And you're like, you know what H.G. Wells is? It's the year 3000.
Exactly. Like,
surely in your time where time travel exists, someone has written a better book about time travel.
But yeah.
Surely. This is like, you know how like, okay, it's like a taser. So I'm thinking about this, right? Because you're like, oh, like maybe they're obsessed with H.G. Wells because time travel exists and they all read it. So you know, like taser is a term from a science fiction book.
Yeah, you mentioned this, I think, in like one of the first couple episodes. The
I guess.
The Thompson whatever.
Tom Swift's electric rifle.
Yeah.
But like,
what a great bit of trivia. I'm going to pass that off as like something I know.
But it's also like, nobody remembers the adventures of Tom Swift, the man of the future who shoots lightning out of a gun. But like, it was immensely popular at the time. And that's like when the guy invented the taser, that's the name. But it's not like we sit around being like, well, we all remember Tom. Is this a Tom Swift novel? No. There's no reason for them to know what H.G. Wells is. That's stupid. There's no reason for Archer to know what H.G. Wells is. There's been a world annihilating war. Drives me when they try to fill. I mean, this is just the thing that is the absolute worst about, like, I have a big complaint about how all IP media now just goes to fill in gaps previous and in between, and not like there hasn't been a Star Wars set where like new stuff happens, like I guess Picard only, right? And otherwise, we're so afraid of actually like doing something new. Everything takes place in the past. And Star Trek specifically doing this is so fucking stupid because the Star Trek timeline is so goofed. Like, it's, you know, if you've watched Discovery, I was watching this going insane, knowing, because at the end of Discovery, it is revealed that Cronenberg on Discovery, right, is Daniels.
Yep.
And what? Like,
spoilers.
Sorry. Spoilers for Discovery, a show that's been over for a while and that you should not watch because it sucks.
Isn't he also like in the far future at that point? Like,
yes. Yes. There's the last couple seasons of Discovery, they're like in the 31st century.
Yeah.
And but like Daniels is from there. And I went like, I was like, look at the years today. And I was like, Daniels was 19 when all warp drive ceased to work, according to Discovery.
Oh, right.
Which means the Daniels that we see, who's like in his 30s, clearly lives in a time where the Federation doesn't exist either. Because like the Vulcans and the Romulans had withdrawn at that point in the Discovery timeline.
Wasn't that a new time? Don't they create a new timeline?
No, you're thinking of the J.J. Abrams Kelvin timeline.
But I thought that was why Strange New Worlds happened. Like that's created a new branch. Time travel is such a fun thing to talk about. So here, though,
I'm going to end it. Daniels, I'm going to kill myself on the mic.
Like we said, there's only two ways out of this podcast. God damn.
Look, we have to mention H.G. Wells so that Daniels can make the point that time travel is hard to understand. It's not simple like H.G. Wells, that basic shit. Also, the important thing here is Daniels is scared because he has no idea what happened. And he's starting to notice that a statue, I guess, to the Federation doesn't look blown up. It doesn't look like it was ever there. So this is not only like a bad future where everything got blown up, but it's also not his future. So that's even getting weirder for him. Back on the Enterprise, T'Pol has allowed the Suliban on the Enterprise because she knows their shit would get wrecked if they try to stop them. So they find a temporal signature on the elevator, and that's okay.
Ooh.
Temporal signature.
A little bit of time dust here. You know?
We found some time dust, basically. Yes, we found some time goo. We get a. Speaking of, like, the Vulcans are just kind of annoying, we get a scene that I just don't actually think was that necessary, which is the Vulcans arguing with the Admiral back on Earth. They're arguing about what's happening. They're arguing about the fact that Archer didn't come back when they called him. And the Vulcans are like, clearly T'Pol wouldn't be participating in an insurrection like this. So she's been kidnapped, and that's how we view this. Okay, that just, like, raised the stakes, I guess, but it doesn't amount to anything, so I don't think this scene was necessary. It's just...
No.
If it amounted to something, maybe, but back in...
So, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Real quick, because I haven't been watching the whole first... I watched, like, the pilot, and I was like, I'm good, and then they jumped to Shockwave 1 and 2.
That's more than I would have asked. Thank you.
How often have they been showing sort of, like, humans and Vulcans back on Earth, like, interacting and arguing over Archer's decisions?
One or two times. Okay. Like, it was a big bit in the previous part one of this episode. The guy, God, what's the name of the Vulcan who's in charge of it?
I wrote it down.
Silic?
Suval.
Not Silic. Silic is the Suval. Too many ass names. Get it together, guys. But, like, every so often, like, he's in the pilot. He's in, like, all the big, like, canonical episodes of the show is about, like, this Vulcan relationship to like the human gazelle.
That is
Oh man, that whole lecture. Oh, I'm so glad that you brought that up. You know, great segue.
I definitely wrote that down because fuck. But the thing I was going to say is, I feel like the human Vulcan relationship comes up not infrequently for good reasons, and that's whenever the Andorians are also in this. And I will say, if you have any inclination to ever go back and watch another Enterprise episode in season one, at least, just make sure Shran is in it. Shran is Jeffrey Combs. He's just a great, like, character actor in a bunch of previous Star Trek things. And he's an Andorian here in this really good... It's the best thing they did with the prequel setup of, like, showing why the Vulcans aren't all they're cracked up to be yet, because they still have, like, essentially a shitty little Cold War with their neighbors that they can't get over. And this Andorian is just... gives that story a better valence than any of this other stuff without the Andorians. So... Yeah.
And it's called... It's a Cold War because Andoria is
and
very
cold.
And
they're
blue.
The Enterprise has been just, like, taken back to the really sick-looking Suliban headquarters that's in, like, a storm. And I think a really interesting thing here happens, maybe just for us temporal Cold War heads. But they're back there, and Silic is trying to talk to his master from the future, the humanoid figure, and he can't. He keeps trying to phone him, and he won't answer. And this actually made me realize the, like, kind of funny thing I read in oral history, where this humanoid figure that we never get the explanation of from the future is, in fact, Archer. And they cannot contact him because they fucked up the timeline. He doesn't exist anymore. He's not where he's supposed to be. And it implies that, like, maybe the reason this is Archer is that all this time stuff has to happen. So Archer has to make it happen to order for the... That would be silly. Mm. But then I see what they're amounting here with this little cue of, like, why can't he call the humanoid figure? Because he's not there. They've messed up the future. And that was interesting to me. I liked that. I found something to chew on here.
There's, like, one hard sci-fi guy in the writer's room who is like, I'm going to make this make sense.
And then he's like, prepare the Vulcan. We're going to do something to her. But back in the future, this library that's only supposed to have digital files in it, what if he said it was the XX Memorial Library just to, like, you know, give some character to this future? No, I remember the library's here.
No.
I don't know.
Let's go to the library. And it's full of paper. Oh, my God. Paper. It's not supposed to be paper.
Hey, don't look at that book that says the Romulan Star Empire. Fun Alpha 9 fact. First time we've mentioned the Romulan Star Empire on this series. But he's like, don't read that. It would be bad if you read that.
It's okay that you saw it and said it out loud. Just forget you saw that. Also, I mentioned the Federation.
Yeah, also forget that. You realize Daniel's being really tight-lipped here because there's all this stuff he doesn't want to tell Archer about, because that's apparently how you keep the timeline good. But what's important here is that everything of this timeline was normal, or like what we expect up until the Warp 5 program, and then everything goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Daniels realizes, you know what? We don't necessarily need to send you back in time or find a way to build a time machine in this ruins of 3000. We just need to send a message back in time. And hey, that's what the Suliban have been doing. And we learned how to do it in high school. So
yeah, it's easy peasy as long as there's a quantum defragulator.
So, okay.
Doesn't he have to, like, take copper off a spoon with a rock?
Yeah, we're
or
coming
something?
To that. That he...
Yeah. He's also flatten it to a millimeter thick. They're like, bitch, you have calipers? Yeah. A millimeter? Okay, fine. Fine.
I think it's weird to say that Star Trek has some good torture interrogation scenes in it.
Yeah.
But it has. That's actually a frequent kind of episode of Star Trek. And you know what? This one is so boring and listless, and it's not interesting. And she repeats the thing, which is, even in being tortured, the Vulcan Science Directorate has determined time error is impossible. It's making Silic mad. He's trying to figure out where Archer is.
It's making me mad because I've seen so much time travel.
Right, exactly. Just admit it. But Malcolm is trapped in his quarters. At some point in this episode, Silic said, put everybody in their quarters. I don't want to deal with them. And he starts hearing sounds coming out of the doorbell. And I thought
it was going to be Archer, too.
I thought they were.
Yeah, me too.
And they did. I think
that's a pretty good bait and switch.
It's a good little bait and switch, because we were already expecting it. This. And
they put some thought into something.
Yeah.
Guys, let's all give them a little round of applause.
The big deal here is that they, you know, the communications have been shut off, but Trip has figured out how to, like, use the doorbells to send low quality audio to everybody. So they're talking again and trying to hatch a plan. Now we're back in the future again, where, like you said, Archer finds a spoon with, like, copper on it. And I don't know why he didn't just find a piece of electronics. That would have made so much more sense. But he finds a spoon and takes a rock and starts to do this, whatever. But there's a little conversation here where Archer's like, why don't we just, like, send a message to me a week before this and just, like, hey, heads up, you know, don't let this happen. And Daniels is like,
we already filmed that episode.
So redo that.
No, actually.
I don't know. Like, he basically just
I already made the worst mistake in the history of time travel. I'm not supposed to make it again. Or not going to make it again. And it's like, okay.
Okay. I guess, like,
whatever. Whatever.
It's not I liked some of the hand waving of just like, don't, time travel's complicated, but this is not good hand waving. This is makes me annoyed hand waving.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of working on a book right now that is a time travel book. Mm. And there's a lot of hand waving in it. But this is frustrating.
Yeah.
Like,
so lazy.
Yeah.
The next scene is weird. This is the one you kind of foreshadowed, Joshua, where post T'Pol torture, she's like stumbling around. She's in pain. She's like going to splash water on her face. And she gets in her bed and starts mumbling. The Vulcan science director has determined that time travel is unfair.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a joke.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know what to think about it. Like, I kind of thought it was funny, but like, should I feel bad right now that she's been tortured? I don't know. It was strange. And I think she's not a bad actor. In fact, I think she's pretty good at doing the Vulcan thing. But this episode was not a very good demonstration of it.
Yeah, it seems like they're telling her to be a certain way, and she's committing, but it's, you don't know why they make that decision, you know? Like, I think, not to jump too far ahead, but like, there's a part where she's outside of her room and the guards find her, and it looks like she is still playing like traumatized or stunned, mm-hmm. or in shock, and it's never really clear if that was an intentional distraction or not.
Yes, we're about to get to that, because the plan here, which we don't get like that filled in on it from Archer and Daniel's perspective, which is, you know, good, because then we don't know what's going to happen next. But it's a bunch of these extreme close-ups of all the crew talking to each other. And they, you know, they're like, ultimately, we need somebody to get in these little narrow corridors, these tubes, not the regular Jeffrey tubes, these even more narrow ones. And we can't fit in them. But what about Hoshi, who is like, if anything, an inch shorter than you guys? Like, come on, you could have definitely fit in there. But
and they're also like, oh, there's like a shorter crew member that we've never heard of and can't see. But we can't. There's no time.
Yeah. She does have at least a good line about it, which is like, isn't there some way I can help that involves translating?
Yeah, that is very funny.
I like that. But, you know, she's going through the tube. She grabs some things from Phlox, his one scene, where he doesn't say anything funny or entertaining, just like, are you okay?
He just waves.
Yeah.
See you next episode.
And then I gotta make it horny. Because they have nothing.
Gotta make it horny.
No ideas. Her tank top gets caught on something as she's dropping out into basically Malcolm's room, like the door in front of him, whatever. And so her top's
thumbs
off
down.
And she's
down.
Like, don't say anything. And it's just egregious. There's not really like a good reason for it. It's not.
They really. Yeah. I just, come on. Like, maybe she drops into his room and he's shirtless and he says, don't say anything.
Yeah. Or she falls on him. I don't know. There's like,
he's doing something embarrassing that isn't being nude. I don't know. Something interesting. Yeah. Maybe. But, or funny.
Very 2002.
And also, like, I don't like, Star Trek has always been like the horny in the weirdest ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Where, like, and this is just so like pedestrian, you know?
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. Like, at least do weird horny.
Yeah. Oh, my top got hooked on the secret vent, and I dropped down, and the top stayed up. Oh no.
That's like a college. That's like that, movie probably. That
yeah. Like, this is Porky's
Stealing Harvard.
I feel like there's also, I was thinking about this. Oh yeah. In the previous scene when we have Archer, or the previous episode, just when Archer is like first sent back in time to the day before the series began and he's shirtless, which was kind of funny. Archer is the most shirtless character on the show. Yeah. I will note that.
I mean, that's Star Trek tradition, though.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
He's got they try to give him a little of the Kirk sauce.
Yeah,
unsuccessfully.
They try.
Unsuccessfully.
Yeah. Okay, so now they're really starting to cook with gas, because this is that scene you were talking about where T'Pol is on the ground next to the teleporter. And like, I have no idea what's going on here, where it seems like that now she's having a rough time of it again because of the torture, or she's like losing faith in this plan they hatched. But
I think she's playing a lot.
It's a distraction. Like it becomes very obvious later. It's a distraction. And I guess like maybe that's what the Suliban would expect, is that she is still having a bad time from the torture they did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's so weirdly acted and awkward and not set up that anything would have been better.
Yeah, she never stands up and like gotcha when the others show up, you know?
The best we get is like, you sure took your time, but it's not like, it's a little even out of character for her, which I also thought was strange, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like the whole plan has been leading up to Malcolm getting in Daniel's room. This has actually been set up multiple times. That was another episode that's kind of okay if you care about the temporal Cold War, which it doesn't sound like you do, Joshua.
I mean, the show barely cares about it. Yeah,
exactly.
Point.
But
the show halfway through the first season was like, we got to dump this stinker.
I mean, this second season, yeah, we're going to get to it. It's interesting, like, the last breath of this resetting first version of the show, and then they reset at the end of the second season, and then...
Yeah.
But this is... this room, we kind of know there's going to be a bag of tricks in here. And I'll admit this. I liked the infinite storage locker gag. Like, Malcolm reaches into the thin, like, door into, like, you know, you can't see. It's a very easy camera trick. But essentially, it's infinite kind of, like, you know, I don't know what they call this. Hammer space or something is, like, the sci-fi term. Yeah. But and he pulls out, like, a Fisher-Price-ass looking tablet. But,
it really doesn't look very good.
And immediately gets caught as he leaves the room. He gets roughed up. And I'll say this. I kind of knew immediately this was the intention because there's a one line earlier on in the hatching of the plan where they're like, Malcolm, you're sure you want to do this? It's going to get rough.
Yeah.
It was obvious. I feel like that was obvious enough to say like, oh, yeah, beating up. This is the rough part of the job. They wanted to get caught. They wanted to hand this, make sure Cilic took this device, thought it was a communication device. That's what he finally tells him. Trip and T'Pol take engineering. The ship is gonna blow up, so while Cilic is like frantically trying to talk to the humanoid figure and having a hard time of getting the like communicator to work, seemingly he's like, I don't care about what's going on in the Enterprise, just tow it out and let it blow up, like whatever. He's distracted. All the Suliban get off the ship, they tow it out there. The second the tow boats like leave, the Enterprise like stops blowing up and warps away, and this is where you get them all on the bridge. They're like, Trip, you almost, those fireworks
fell for it.
They, you know, he almost did too much with that. I mean, I kind of like when they hatch these little plans and they pull them off.
Archer,
this is a B minus.
Archer, like emerging from the hologram to kick Cilic in the head.
Best part of it
was cool and good. I think.
Yes. And again, if they are literally going to apply later, if the thought line was Archer is the humanoid figure, I'm like, I see what you're doing there. Like, it's kind of good. I wish that's they ever wrap that up, but I mean, why would they? It's not a very good, it's not a good story.
Stupid. It doesn't make any sense if it's him. It's stupid.
Yes. The Enterprise is now under attack because obviously the plan has been revealed. Paul is trying to meet up with the Vulcan ship, which they actually did name in this episode.
They finally named it after they spent an entire summer thinking in the last episode. They don't name it.
The Dakir. But they're trying to rendezvous, and it's not on sensors. It's not there. And, you know, they're like, oh, shit, we're getting blasted. And then back on the Suliban station, Archer's like, I'm going to take you hostage. You are going to let my friends go away, and then you're going to give me a ship. And you know, it's very quick here. It's wrapping this up pretty quickly.
Yeah, they really zip through the last bit of it.
And, yeah, all the Suliban just like mysteriously stop attacking the Enterprise and leave. Another little pod comes and Archer's like, I feel like I've been away for 1,000 years. And then it's not the end of the like episode. We just have to get a bunch more boring Vulcan human stuff.
This is where the gazelle speech happens, right?
You're right.
I believe so.
So we get the Vulcans. They've accepted the like explanation of the Enterprise did not actually cause this explosion and kill 3,000 people. But you've also done a bunch of other shit, so we're still going to recommend that we end this plan. You started up our war and made stuff bad. You like freed a bunch of Suliban. You know, you're shooting from the hip. You're a cowboy, basically. He doesn't trip. Gets so pissed off and with his country twang, really like lays into him. But this is all like it's just stilted. Like this was all annoying to me until Archer gets and says. First of all, Starfleet training is basically like, we're going to take you around the Earth to a bunch of different cool locales because he's been to Australia. Now we know he took a safari in Africa. And while he was in Africa, he saw a gazelle give birth. And he's like, that little baby gazelle, it doesn't take long before it was on its little shaky feet. And then it was walking and then it was running with the herd. And you know what? Humans are like that. We suck at first. We really don't know what we're doing. We kind of stumble around and fall on our face, but we learn from those mistakes and we get better. And that's what being human is all about. And this guy's like, I don't care.
Whatever, man.
Okay. Whatever.
Hey, sure.
Cool metaphor, bro. But like, I'm still going to recommend you don't be the captain of a ship that starts new wars.
Yeah, maybe don't start
it's
a dozen
so funny.
Wars.
Because like, you know, again, in the context of like the inciting incident, it's like, so what if we accidentally did a 9/11? You know? It wasn't our fault. And if it was, our heart is we're in the right place.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like an insane thing. Because like, again, I mean, not to take it too seriously, right? But like the whole thing's like an oversight, right? Like they missed something, you know? Like, and because they missed something, they inadvertently set off this whole chain reaction.
Oh, you have to understand that the Sulaban device was cloaked and they wouldn't have known about it if they hadn't got the security cam footage of it.
Yeah.
It's very dumb. It's actually dumber.
Yeah.
It's quite stupid. They really fucked up. And and then what does T'Pol say that like convinces them?
Oh yeah. She puts it over the edge.
At the end,
something.
Archer is like, you took it over the top.
Yeah.
Well, she basically says like, you know what? I don't agree with Archer. Because humans aren't the only people that suck at first.
Oh, that's right. We also suck. We're Vulcans.
We also suck sometimes. Remember that time we sucked by putting one of our spy listening bases in our religious temple? Like, that was kind of a bad idea, you know?
Pretty stupid, sis. Yeah, and then Archer is like, goes out to Paul's room and is like, you took it over the top, baby. And she's like, what happened? He's like,
I don't know.
You took it over the top.
He just says it again.
I don't know what that metaphor means.
Like, okay, just for a second, imagine the top is here. And here's yes. you, and you've taken over the top.
I'm not aware of this Earth metaphor. What do you mean?
I'm not aware of your Earth metaphors. Right. Over the top of what, sir?
This has been an extra special episode of the first episode of the season. But yeah. what really made it extra special was having you, Joshua. And I would love for you to plug something to make it worth your while.
I would love to plug... my wife hearing the theme song and saying, that's the Star Trek theme song.
Oh, you who also hates the Star Trek theme song is my wife.
Hell
and
yeah.
And also my wife's wife, who's me. But I figured out.
Pro tip.
Joshua, pro tip. Play that sucker at 2x speed or 1.5 speed.
Yeah.
That fucking rocks.
It kind of turns into a jam. Right. It's weird.
Okay.
Yeah, did you tell your wife that it was written originally for Patch Adams?
No, I didn't. I'm gonna go back and tell her that.
Yeah, there's like a Rod Stewart version that was performed for Patch Adams.
Incredible. Oh, so that's why it has the talent it does behind it. Yeah. Because weirdly. It was made for a movie.
Weirdly.
But yeah, I write at Slate, The Ringer, occasionally Vanity Fair. I usually just talk shit about movies and TV and video games, and sometimes people like reading it. Hopefully you.
you had a great piece on Rogue.Sight recently, which was nice. Oh.
I did. I also I happily do stuff for the homies at worker owned sites like Rogue.Sight. Aftermath as well. We're all helping each other out, unlike Vulcans and humans.
Yeah, Rogue.Sight sort of like a baby gazelle learning how to walk.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, for Tempora Culture War, been Clayton Ashley.
And I've been Matty Lipchansky, and we'll see you soon. And as always, and now we say, sorry, Josh, we're going to say our famous episode ending catchphrase, which
you
is
watched the first
the thing first... Archer, oh yeah, you listen to the first episode, is the thing Archer says at the end of the first episode is like, he's going to be like, make it so or whatever. Anyways.
It's like, let's go, right?
And as always, let's go.
Let's go.
That's it. It's so bad.